I don't know how to podcast anymore, but no one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Cause no one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Little brother, look around. Welcome back to the Fundamental Podcast. I believe it's episode 77. I went a year without episodes. Yikes. So, two guys are going to help me do this one. We're going to talk NBA playoffs. First off, an old friend, Snotty Drippin', James Hollis. What is up, man?
I am honored and flattered, and I'm almost, I'm never speechless, but I'm glad to be part of your reentry to the podcast world. I feel lucky to be part of your reintroduction. I appreciate it, man.
Well, I appreciate you, being a guest on my podcast for all these years, even a co-host at one point too. So yeah, we're gonna kill this episode. And we have a new friend on this podcast as well. He goes by the name of T.I. Just kidding. Ty Windish. Tell us where you can find your work. I know you specialize in the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah. So I do a little bit of blogging for a site called Behind the Buck Pass that everyone should read because I do the best dang Bucks coverage on the internet. but mostly these days I focus on the podcast, Time Out with Ty. So, but yeah, I like to do all sorts of stuff. I do a little bit here, a little bit there. You know, I get around basically is what I would say. And I thank you as well for bringing me back. I feel like we're like the Undertaker busting out of the coffin here. We're back. We're ready.
See, I like you already because he's already making wrestling references here, and I enjoy wrestling, oh, yeah. So.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So, the original plan here was to have Snotty as a guest. My usual co-host, like three-fourths of the time, Adam Jacoby, couldn't make it. So, Snotty insisted we bring in a Bucks guy because the Bucks and the Celtics are going to go against each other in the first round of the NBA playoffs. So, we'll hold off on that right now. We're going to go through the entire NBA playoff tournament here. And they can make some picks if they want to. But let's start with the Eastern Conference. We'll get to the Bucks and the Celtics in a second. But let's start with the surprise number one seed, Toronto Raptors, against the, I guess, surprise number eight seed, Washington Wizards here. Toronto franchise record 59 wins. Washington didn't have John Wall for half the season, and they end up with 43 wins. My question is that since we've had so many failures of the Toronto Raptors in the past 2 years, do you believe in them winning the East at all?
I'll start with this one. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Now, I know I'm known as a kind of negative guy sometimes, but the Raptors, a little bit sometimes, all right? Right. Maybe it's understandable. No, I've watched them several times this season, and yeah, it's a whole different vibe around them. While before they used to kind of wait on Kyle Lowry and DeRozan to save them, now there's obviously other guys like, you know, that Van Vliet guy. I heard about him, and I finally watched him a couple games. He's legit. And, you know, DeLon Wright can make things happen. He's a nice scorer off the bench. C.J. Miles is a steady vet. Siakam and Poeltl, those two young athletic guys can cause all kind of problems. And O.G. Anunoby with the starters is like a perfect glue guy. So it's a whole different vibe. They've kind of maybe slipped a little bit these last few games. I'm going to try not to like punish them with the past falters. You know, I'm not going to punish them, the team now, with how they performed the past. Now, if they come out in game one and they fall back in those old ISO habits, they're hard to break, right? So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say this is a different Raptors team.
It's a tradition like no other. They always fail the first game of the playoffs, right, Ty?
Yeah, exactly. And like the thing I'm worried about, like Snotty and I literally did, or James and I, excuse me, literally did a series pick'em podcast last night, and I said Raps in five because the Wizards openly hate each other, which is generally makes it difficult to win basketball games considering it's a team sport. Just today, Kyle Lowry was quoted as saying game one is like our game seven. So I'm going to say Raps in six now because they're for sure losing game one if they're going to put that much pressure on themselves. Like game one is not game seven, Kyle Lowry. It's just game one. It reminds me of like from Ricky Bobby when Ricky Bobby tells his dad, like, you always told me if you're not first, you're last. And his dad was like, I was high when I said that. There's second, there's third. Like game one is not game seven. It's just game one. your problem, Toronto Raptors, is that you keep acting like it's game seven and putting all this pressure. Like, they need to come out loose. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to win the series because, like I said, like, John Wall and Marcin Gortat just don't like each other at all, which is strange. But, and then the Raptors are just better, like James said. They're a different team this year. They play a lot better. But I think they are going to psych themselves out and make it harder than it should be.
But you heard what Bradley Beal said earlier in the year, where they said that they're the top team in the East, and they're capable of taking out the top two teams in the East, which is this year, Toronto and Boston. Of course, obviously, you're talking about Cleveland, too. But Washington is 20-21 without Wall. 23-18 with him, not much better. So, are you giving Wizards a chance here? Any sort of chance to win the series?
I'm going to say this. They're not a usual eighth seed because, like you just said, Wall missed a big chunk of the season. But something about this team, it feels like 1 + 1 + 1 is equaling like 2.7. They don't add up somehow. Like, they're less than the sum of their parts, while the Raptors have been more than the sum of their parts. So I got to give them a chance because I think I don't think it's crazy to say that the talent of Wall and Beal is equal to Kyle Lowry and DeRozan, right? I mean, mm-hmm. talent wise, right. maybe this season DeRozan was and somebody brought this to my attention today. DeRozan was great to start the season. He was actually like subpar toward like after the All-Star break. Like, his numbers all kind of slid, and he fell back to more his pre, hey, he's shooting three numbers as far as, you know, like net on off. Like, somebody was saying that towards the end of the season, he was actually like almost the team was 5 points better when he was on the bench. So, like, that's kind of concerning to me for the Raptors. But, like, yeah, the Wizards seem like they openly almost hate each other. You know, like, they, yeah, there's a lot of disdain, it seems like, right. between all of them. Somehow.
It's pretty hilarious. Especially with
Gordon. Yeah, it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. So they have a chance. Like, let's say they all just kind of, you know, they lock in for the playoffs and they say, you know, forget everything that happened before this point. Let's all play hard. Wall should be pretty rested with, you know, even though he was rehabbing his knee. But, you know, he didn't have game minutes on him for, like, almost half the season. Maybe. I'd say they have a chance. I definitely say they have a chance.
I mean, just going quickly off what you said, James, I mean, I don't think there's any – like, the East is surprisingly – decent from 1 to 8 this year. Like, the Wizards hate each other, yeah, and the chemistry is crap, but like you said, they still have Wall and Beal. The Bucks have Giannis at the 7th seed. The Heat play really well together, and I was admonished by a Heat person who will remain nameless for not giving them a chance against the Sixers. But they're fine too. The Pacers are a great story with Vic Oladipo, and obviously the first 4 seeds are good too. So I think, like, there should be some good games in the Eastern Conference. Obviously, if everyone was healthy, it would be even better.
Mm-hmm. So you say Toronto in 6, Ty. Snotty?
I think I say, man, I wish I remember. Me and Ty just had this podcast.
Man, you know, I change your mind all the time anyway.
I don't mean to change my mind. I think I'm just full of crap. So I think I'm going to say, I think same thing. Toronto in 6.
It's a safe bet, right? Toronto in 6, because you pretty much know they're probably going to falter either playing tomorrow when they listen to this podcast, probably today, right? So
it's so weird that they put so much stock. Like, they're like, our game one is game 7. Like,
they openly care about it, which is dumb.
It's in their head, yeah. It's really obviously in their head, and that's weird.
This series overall is weird. Like, Toronto fails at game 1, and the Wizards hate each other, and they've been together for a few years. Like, why do they hate each other now?
I think they kind of always have. I think they hate the Raptors, too. I mean, they swept them in 2015, and that was, like, that was as close as Dwayne Casey has come to getting fired since he's been the Raptors coach, mm-hmm. is what a lot of people say. I mean, these teams have a history which could make things fun, but, I mean, it all depends what John Wall shows up.
Yeah, or if they actually like each other during that series.
Yeah, it's true.
Number 4, the Cavs. Number 5, the Pacers. You just mentioned the Pacers about being... they're basically the Cinderella team in the East because we didn't give them a chance before the season started because of the Paul George trade. And it turns out that the Thunder and the Pacers had the same record this season of 48 wins. And
that's crazy.
As far as the Cavs go, they've been very, very up and down. They've had 2 different teams this season. LeBron has been incredible as always, but... the last time a bottom 10 defensive team won the title was the Lakers in 2001. They are second to last this season. Can LeBron do this by himself this year?
Ty, you take it first.
I mean, yeah. But, I mean, it's not by himself. He's got Kevin Love there, too. But, I mean, like, this has been something that we've seen over and over again. He's been to 7 straight finals coming into this postseason. It's not going to shock anyone if it's 8 this year. Like LeBron and 4 shooters is just something that like no one has really figured out yet. Sans the Warriors, because they were just like, oh, we have KD, so good luck. It's just like you can't, like, he's too freaking good. Like, you just can't do anything about it. Like, every year people around midseason go, is this, like, LeBron's done, the Cavs are done, they have no chemistry, they have no defense, and you know, to their lack of credit, they don't have any defense, and that's why I think the Pacers will probably steal a game, is just because the Cavs will give up like 130 points. But like, playoff LeBron is a different animal. He's the best player in the world when he's engaged. Still, sorry to everyone in the West who vies for that title, it's still LeBron James. And I mean, like, the Pacers are not ready for that. They're going to come out and try and be very cute, I'm sure. It's LeBron James. They have no one who's nearly fit to guard him. He's going to take over. He's going to put up many LeBron stat lines of 27-7-7. It doesn't matter what they do. It's the king is still the king.
It's amazing because he's in his 15th year and he's still doing this and he's still getting facial dunks and he's still dominating the game. I don't understand it, but, you know, it's LeBron James.
Sonny. I'll say this. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an entertaining series because, I mean, I know we haven't forgotten Lance Stephenson blowing in LeBron here.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, man, we're going to see a lot of Lance Stephenson trying to get into LeBron's skin. We're going to see Thad Young trying to guard LeBron. They're going to throw bodies at him. Right? It is weird, but yeah, there's just no answer for playoff LeBron. That's where I'm at, too. And it sounds like shoddy analysis, kind of like some Skip Bayless analysis. But for whatever we think about LeBron James, there's just literally no one who can stop him. On the Pacers, at least, and no other team in the East from what we've seen. So until I see it, I'm not going to believe it. Our probably friend of your program and friend of, you know, we all know him, Oliver Maroney, he tweeted out today that he took the Pacers in 6 or 7,
that's,
I think.
And, that's wild.
Hey, bold take, Cotton. I appreciate the boldness of it, or you want attention, one or the other, I'm not sure. But, yeah, and until LeBron is that one person, well, I'll say, until I see it, I'm not going to believe it. He's like
exactly.
Jason.
Exactly.
So I see his body stretched out and metaphorically dead as far as, like, you know, vanquished and beat by another team. I'm not believing that he's going to get beat in the East.
Yeah, man. People are tweeting at me because one of my playoff predictions is that, like, yeah, like, everyone's going to remember how good playoff LeBron is. And someone tweeted, like, well, how do you know he's going to do it again? Like, he's done it for 7 straight years. 7 straight years. Like, what more evidence do you need? He's won the East for, like, do you know how long 7 years is? I was in freaking high school. Okay, I was halfway through high school.
I'm going to play a little – I hate devil's advocate, but I'm I do this because I mean it, though.
Uh-huh.
Sooner or later, Father of Time has to step in.
Right.
Like, he's not a machine. Yeah. He's not a robot. And one of these years, he's going to look great in the regular season, and he won't have it. No, because, I mean, he's not a robot. I don't like the fact that we kind of give him these mythical powers. One of these years, he's just not going to be able to put up 35 and 12 and 12. He just won't be able to do it.
We saw.
Is this going to be the year? I don't think so. But, you know.
Yeah.
I just, like you said, I got to see it to believe it.
Exactly.
We saw it with Tim Duncan, right, in his last year. Like, there were a few games where he was fantastic, and then for a stretch of the season, he just looked done. So, yeah. Far time will eventually catch up.
Which is crazy, though, because even Duncan kind of, like, started his decline maybe 2 or 3 years before he retired, you know, where we saw it coming. But,
yeah.
But Bron looks just as good now as he did in year 8. You know what I mean? That's wild. So,
yeah.
Some would say he looks better. Like, there's an argument that this is his best season ever, which is, like, I mean, that's what happens when you spend millions of dollars on your body and you're just that driven. Like, his level of commitment to being a great basketball player is unlike anything we've probably ever seen before.
Right.
The only reason I'll say he might not be better is because the defensive lapses are longer.
Yeah, that's true.
Bron used to be a real strong defender, you know, for most of the game, and he would kill on offense. He's definitely smart on offense now, but yeah, he goes long stretches where he just doesn't care at all.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Two things. Number one, Cleveland swept Indiana last season, so there's that history right there. And number two, you mentioned Oliver Moroni. I'm having him as a guest. Tomorrow night, actually, so I'll get on him for that Indiana prediction. So I have Cleveland in. I do have Cleveland in 5. I think
yeah.
We'll win one.
Gentlemen sweep. Yeah, I have the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I'm pulling for Indiana to pull off the upset, but
right.
Yeah, I got Yeah, we're agreeing way too much. I gotta find something to fight with.
We are so agreeable.
I will say it would be very bold and maybe in his character for Oladipo to try to guard LeBron sometimes. I don't know if that would go well, but I mean he's been a terrific, maybe all defensive second team caliber player this year. Mm-hmm. It would be really interesting if he took that challenge on. I don't know if they're gonna do it. He's undersized, obviously. Yeah, but it would be bad juju for him. I mean, we've like Tony Allen locked up Kevin Durant 1 year, and Tony Allen's much shorter than Kevin Durant. But I'm not saying he's as good as Tony Allen, but it would be I think really compelling to watch Vic really try to make an imprint on this series.
Mm-hmm. This is David Menneman from ESPN, and you are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
Okay, so let me ask you guys a question. Mm-hmm. This is who is the coolest guy in this series? Not about best player, the one player in this series that you like. I think this guy, my eyes would be on that guy.
Miles Turner.
I'm going to go with LeBron. Like, do you remember how hard he disrespected the Raptors? I think the last series they played, he literally spun the ball in Serge Ibaka's face and then drilled a three over him. He pretended to drink a beer. Like, the guy is like, he was literally just, like, literally toying with them like a cat with a mouse. And I thought it was captivating.
I'm going with Oladipo. I think Oladipo, like...
He's number two.
Well, the meteoric rise, now this is my house celebration, the quick shots, the pull-ups. He's been incredible, and I get it. He's not on LeBron's level, but he's been playing as a top 15 player this season. To me, and his whole story, I think, makes him the coolest guy in this series.
I just heard because he's going to try to knock on everybody on the Cavs like he did last season on Tristan Thompson. He just disrespected him last year, so
I'm going to my let's not even talk about Tristan Thompson.
Oh boy.
Here's another question, real quick, before we go on to the next one.
Oh boy.
Who has the best chance of destroying somebody else and making a poster? Like, I'm thinking Larry Nance.
He's gonna
kill somebody metaphorically with a huge dunk.
Yeah, it's Larry Nance on two levels. One, because he's like such a great dunker, and two, because he has LeBron feeding him the ball, and we all know like he just puts you in great positions.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with that one. Yeah, and I've watched him a lot here, obviously in LA. So, let's go with the Sixers against the Heat. Sixers won 16 straight going into this postseason. It's their first time winning 50 games since they went to the finals with Allen Iverson. Miami held steady at 43-44 wins. Should we give Philly a chance to win the East? Do you think it's that wide open, considering how the Cavs are, again, up and down this season?
I mean, I will say, like, I still believe the King is still the King. LeBron is still the guy to beat. I think this Philly team has the best chance, though, considering the Raptors, like, cannot get over their fear of opening games of series. The Celtics are obviously banged up. I don't think anyone else is just flat out good enough. Like, Philly is, like, they're not afraid of anyone. And that's the thing that I think really, like, they're so young. I think, James, you said on my pod that, like, they don't know to be afraid. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they should be afraid of anyone the way this team can play. I mean, they're a monstrosity defensively, especially with Embiid healthy. They can score a lot. Embiid is, like, a matchup nightmare for anyone. No one can really hold him one-on-one. Ben Simmons is doing Ben Simmons stuff, which is a really fun to watch. I mean, this team is, like, really dangerous, in my opinion, and they could. I think it's possible. I don't think it's likely. I will say their championship odds of 25-1 are pretty high for a team this
pretty
good.
Pretty generous, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, Warriors are, like, 9-5, so still the best over Houston I saw today on some rant. I mean, there's always 100 different ones, you know, but
right.
It was interesting to me that Philly's was that high, considering – how damn good they are.
That's pretty good odds. I definitely think they have a chance at least to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. When you got two guys as talented as Simmons and Embiid. Now, I think they're on, what, a 17-game winning streak right now?
16.
But Embiid's already said he's out for game one. And I think I said this on Ty's show too, that might be almost a blessing in disguise for the rest of the Philly guys, because they get their feet wet. There's no expectations because like their big gun is out, but they can probably play Embiid. They can probably play Whiteside off the floor, right? If white, there's no one for Whiteside to guard, and they really pick the tempo up. You know, we know that Spo had no problem benching Whiteside, and then let's be real. That's what his big beef is. Whiteside's big beef is that, oh, I'm the star, and they don't treat me like it. Whatever. So I think Miami has a shot just because they're so well coached. But again, this talent wins in the playoffs, man, and they just have a lot of like, you know, good kind of role players. You know, Goran Dragic is a very good player, but if he's your best player, you know, you kind of have issues. Yeah. You know, and they were getting, you know, they were getting just like a 500 team, and this is who they are right now. So I think Philly has this one in the bag, and it'd be really cool if they made it to the finals.
Yeah, great defensive team in Miami, but like you mentioned, like they're just a bunch of very good players. Like, unless Dragic averages like 45 points a game, which is probably not going to happen, obviously. Right? So, Sixers?
Sixers, yeah, five? And five, probably, yeah.
I give him six. I give Miami, Miami might steal one, and Miami might steal one of the first two, and they'll get one at home, and then that'll be it. Yeah.
I think it all depends when Embiid comes back. I mean, they're starting five of Redick, Covington. I don't even know where to put Simmons because he's like the point guard, but he's everywhere. Simmons, Saric, and Embiid outscores opponents this season by 21.4 points per 100 possessions. And this is not a small sample size. They played 49 games together, 600 minutes, and they were 33-16 in that stretch. Like, those five are just I don't know what you do against them if you're Miami. So when Embiid comes back, I think the Sixers are going to look damn good. I think they'll look good without him too, as we saw in this winning streak. But yeah, I mean, I think they're going to handle the Heat.
A little bit off topic, but did you like the process? Because I've been pretty vocal against it the past few years, because here you are winning 19 and I believe 17, then 10 games.
Yep.
And like, doesn't that alienate your fan base? Like, I would hate to be doing a process. I'd rather be like the Rockets or the Spurs when it comes to building teams.
Well, yeah, of course everyone would be the Spurs. I mean, yeah, give me 20 straight years of being a contender. But I think all along my take on the process was that, like, it's going to be relatively effective. But I don't like it. Like, I don't like the way it is. Like, I'd love to see the NBA abolish the draft and just open up free agency, use the G League more, whatever the exact solution is to avoid this happening again. Mm-hmm. Because, like, they pretty much proved it's almost a foolproof strategy. Like, if you acquire top draft picks over a number of years, you're going to get a lot of good players. They're going to be very cost controlled. I mean, you look at Philly this summer and they could realistically add LeBron because they still have all these guys on rookie scale deals and they'll be able to go over the cap to re-sign them. Like, it was a masterstroke. It worked. I mean, it was ugly and it galvanized their fan base. Really, it's made them very defensive of Hinky and all their players and Philly and, of course, the process itself. But instead of making them turn away, it kind of almost pulled them together. Like, they went through it together. Like, it was a catastrophe. And it kind of was a basketball catastrophe. But, I mean, there's no doubting that it worked. It was effective.
But isn't that foolproof, James? Because look at Minnesota. They were in the lottery for 14 years, 13 years.
Well,
and then Sacramento hasn't made a playoff since 2006.
So it takes a combination of a strong, committed ownership, right? Because like the Sacramento Kings, they're just bad. That's not tanking.
Yeah,
right? They'll tank at the end of the season, but they're just bad.
They're never bad enough. They get like the seventh pick every year.
But see, even so, that should have been enough. Just look, like, they just made bad picks. Same thing with the Timberwolves. Like when they had what was that GM's name? And he picked Richard Rubio.
David Kahn.
Yeah, like that's just like
three point guards instead of Steph Curry.
That's just a bad GM. So, the process to me, like, and I'm not going to use the whole thing as she's the fan base because from what I saw, every Philly fan was like, sure, let's do it. I'm tired of being a doormat. I'm tired of being a doormat. I'm tired of being, you know, the 10th seed or maybe the 8th seed and, you know, being ran out of the playoffs. I'm tired of it. Just sure, whatever you got to do. Get these bloated vets on bad contracts off my team. So I'm not going to use the whole, you know, it cheats the fan thing because Philly fans were like, let's do it. And it's almost to me almost like if you have to raise a city block and then, you know, you wait for it to develop and then they build it back up. Sure, it looks bad, and it's, you know, it's demolition time, and then it's ugly while they're rebuilding, but when they're done, it's done. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I get it. And if they're going to change if they make lottery reform and they want to, you know, change so they don't want to reward losing, that's fine. But he did what he did under the rules. And, like, we don't have to like it. A lot of people, I didn't mind it. I was, like, fascinated by the experience, by the whole experience of it.
It was fascinating in a way too. I just didn't like the fact that what if it continued to be a losing culture or something like they did with Sacramento, Minnesota, and Sacramento has some high picks. They had Boogie, they had Tyreek Evans, and they picked
That's just bad picks. Like, and that was my thing. Like, I saw people saying, "Oh, the losing culture. Nobody's gonna want to go there." Well, they've already disproved all that. They got J.J. Redick to come in. Sure, they had to pay him a lot, but they got him.
Right.
And they also got, you know, hey, Ilyasova and Bellinelli could win anywhere they wanted to. They wanted to come there, mm-hmm. you know. So that means a lot, you know. And so I get it. I get it, the fact that people were saying it went against the spirit of competition, all that. Hey, change the rules if you don't like the rules.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, and it's not foolproof. Look, they wasted a pick on Ja Okafor. Mm-hmm. They wasted a pick on Nerlens. Michael Carter Williams was a lottery pick, and then he turned out to be like, so that's fine. But guess what? They still ended up with Dario, Ben Simmons, our boy Embiid, mm-hmm. and Fultz. They still ended up with four great players. So you can't say it worked. It worked like just the way they thought it was going to work.
Well, and the difference between the Kings and the Timberwolves and the process Sixers is the process Sixers had a plan. And they stuck to it by and large until the NBA shadow forced Hinkie out of there. Those other franchises have never had a plan for more than like 40 days at a time. I mean, it's so obvious. They don't know what they're doing. Like the Kings, I remember when I covered them, they brought in George Karl to coach the team, and he's known for running like these high paced running gun offenses. Your best player is a center. It doesn't make any sense. He has no time to get in the paint. He won't get enough touches. But they just did it anyway. Like, they weren't thinking. They just did stuff. And some of it goes to the ownerships, like groups of the teams at the time. Sometimes they just want to win too fast. Sometimes they just really don't know what exactly they're doing. I think you saw a team with a plan, and they carried it out, and they stuck with it despite a lot of losing. And it worked. And big shouts to Brett Brown for still being there and for getting a chance to coach a good team. We see a lot of coaches right now getting fired just because, like, their teams absolutely stink. And, you know, maybe it's fair, maybe it's not. But, I mean, you have to stick with a plan. Like, that's what we see. The best franchises stick with plans and they try to be consistent. And the worst ones change their vision every year or two, and it never works.
At least the Wolves made the playoffs this season. Meanwhile, the Kings are still stuck in purgatory of what? 9 coaches in 10 years or something like that? It's something ridiculous like that, but.
It's Kristen Ledlow from NBA Inside Stuff, and I was once on the Ray Reyes Fundamental Podcast. Once. That was enough.
Finally, this is what I brought you guys in for. Celtics against the Bucks. Celtics at the number 2 seed, 55 wins. And Milwaukee at the number 7 seed. First off, is Brad Stevens the coach of the year?
Yes.
Not even.
That was quick.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like a homer, I guess. I think so. Yeah. I think the fact that it's almost like a game of, let's say we were having a chef competition and you kept taking away certain ingredients from me. Mm-hmm. And I still make a great meal at the end of it. That's, right. You know, one of the best you've had. That's like, yeah, Gordon Hayward, boom. Kyrie, boom. You know, Smart. In and out. Now he's gone again. Tice was a great. Tice was actually one of the best, was a better defensive rookie.
They made Tice into a real guy. Like, I mean, come on. Like, they gave Brad Stevens like a potato and a cup of water, and he made tiramisu. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, of course he's the coach of the year. I think Quinn Snyder's case is good. I think that, like, that's the hardest one for me. D'Antoni is, like, his is good too, because they're just, like, the Rockets are so incredible. But, I mean, I just, like, I watch the Celtics, and I'm like, who the hell are these people? Playing
and they win.
Yeah, crazy. Our predictions for this are a little awkward. James, do you want to tell him how we fall on this series?
I also want to give a shout out to Brett Brown. Brett Brown, I thought, did a great job this year.
Yeah, him too.
I mean, look, no one thought Philly would be this good, and sure, it's the players and talent, but you know, he got those guys whipped into shape pretty quick. That's awesome. So I'm I'm just shocked. Even my guy Matt Moore at HP Basketball by on Twitter, he thinks I think he said Celtics in 5 or 6. I'm shocked how many people are going Celtics here, because I guess I'm looking at it as your best player or your second best player, however you want to say it. But Kyrie Irving was the best offensive player on the team. He's gone. Gordon Hayward's gone. Smart's gone. They lost their best defender, Marcus Smart, and people are still picking them over Giannis, who at least for most of the season was an MVP candidate.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like that's crazy to me, because in the playoffs, we know star power matters. Mm-hmm. It matters that you can have a guy who can just go and get you 40, and that could be Giannis. You know, now I get the rest of the team around them has been kind of an undisciplined mess. But Chris Middleton's a 20-point game scorer. Eric Bledsoe's scoring almost 20 a game, too. So you got these three. You got, like, a poor man version of a big three against Al Horford and a rookie and a second-year guy, you know? So I thought Milwaukee in 7. And, Ty, what you got?
I have Celtics in 6. just because, like, I've watched a lot of Bucks basketball, and they kind of stink. They don't really do anything on offense or defense that makes sense. They have Giannis, sure, but the game plan is, like, run one ball screen, and then good luck, Giannis, try to score now. And I just don't think that's a great plan against a Celtics defense that was the best in the NBA this season. They're always terrific when Al Horford's on the floor. I'm sure he'll be on the floor quite often, especially when Giannis is. I think really, like, the crux of the series might end up being how much the Celtics turn the ball over on offense, just because Giannis is unstoppable in transition. Those are the easiest buckets the Bucks get. Bledsoe's really good at poking the ball out and getting those things going. But, I mean, if the Celtics take care of the ball on offense decently well, Scary Terry keeps the handle tight, I just think the Bucks are going to have just the hardest time scoring against Boston. I think the stat is the Celtics are 36-5 when they hold teams under 100 points this year, which is wild that they did it half the season. And I just think, like, they're the better. They're not the more talented team, but I think they play as the better team.
We mentioned coaching. Like, it's Brad Stevens against Joe Prunty.
Yeah, that sounds a little lopsided, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah, and the thing is, Brad Stevens inherited, well, not inherited, but he took a team that had 4 guys returning from last year, and they immediately went on a 16-game winning streak. Like, he got these guys together immediately, and they still kept winning games even after all these guys got hurt. So, this is just a coaching mismatch right now.
I'm so glad that you guys are boosting me up and gassing me up and giving me a little more confidence, man. Because I get it, but, like, my thing is, like, even if, let's say, you give Greg Popovich a real good college team, they're not beating a bad pro team.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, and that, like, right now, I mean, yeah, Boston's down to not sticks and stems, obviously, but, like, this is they struggle making shots and creating offense, and that's where they struggle the most, for whatever reason, through stretches. And Milwaukee is so long and so athletic, they're going to shrink the floor and make things even harder and give up, you know. So, but I know that, hey, Ty educated me that the Bucks are, you know, they give up, teams shoot great from three and they give up a lot of open threes.
They're not a good defensive team, despite their length.
Which is so weird. So, yeah, maybe I didn't watch enough Milwaukee. And so maybe I'm giving them too much credit.
Which is weird. I mean, Ty, you obviously watched the Bucks over the past 2 years, but what happened to their defense? Because they were, what, top 5, top 10 a few years ago? And they're 19th this season. And they were worse the past few years.
Yeah, they love helping unnecessarily and leaving the corners open and leaving the rim unprotected, which is, those are the best shots in basketball to get on offense. So if you leave those areas open.
Tell me if I'm wrong with this. One of their things is they're almost too aggressive. And
yeah, they absolutely are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, they actually chase too hard and they end up, like you said, giving up open layups and open dunks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was like a 1 or 2 game spell after Kidd got fired where they won a couple, and it seemed like they had stopped trapping so much, but then, like, it's just like there's no time to really revamp the defense, and I don't know what Prunty's preferred defense would be. I mean, I don't know what he was running with Great Britain for all those years, but they're super aggressive. They love to trap, and it just they end up just inexplicably leaving the area's offenses love to thrive in wide open. And it doesn't help that like their centers are Thon Maker, Tyler Zeller, who is fine on offense and just gets tired and after 5 minutes of gameplay, and Thon Maker, who if you're familiar with the gif from the infomercial of the guy going to wash his car and just falling and dropping everything, that's Thon every time he's in any basketball situation. Like, I think he does have a lot of potential, but he's just not really ready yet, and he's just kind of – he just kind of has the deer in headlights look, no pun intended, because he's a buck. But it's just like they don't have good defensive centers outside of Giannis, basically, and they just don't do smart things on defense. And that's why even though they have so many plus defenders, they don't do well on that side of the floor.
Bucks opponents get a lot of shots off. They are four field goals allowed.
Total. Yeah, the Bucks are also the worst rebounding team in the league, so that doesn't help much either.
Yeah, which is... it's so weird because they have that length and we salivate over their length and yet they're last in rebounding.
I'll say it's not that weird because I like John Henson as a guy. He's like a nice, like a team guy, but he's just not very strong, a strong rebounder.
Mm-hmm. He's never in the right position, it feels like, at any part of the floor. He'll get lobs rarely, but like he's not in good positions on defense and he's never in the right place to rebound the basketball.
So the Bucks guy picks the Celtics, and the Celtics guy picks the Bucks. That's fantastic. Yeah,
we both watch our teams a lot.
I'll say Celtics in seven. It's going to be close, I think.
You know what? And I guess I'm really doing my best not to be a homer, and maybe I'll come off as pessimistic. I get it. I'll take the Heat later on.
Right. Let's go to the Western Conference. Houston won 65 games to the number one seed. Mike D'Antoni is behind the helm, but their defense is top 10 this season. Minnesota struggled at the end without Jimmy Butler, but they still came in at number 8 after winning their last game against Denver. James Harden, MVP, no qualms about that, right? Like, he's the guy.
Yeah, lock it in.
Mm-hmm. I just want him to get it so the Houston guys will stop whining.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I'm still seeing them tweet about, oh, but Russell has triple doubles, though. And like, dude, just let it go. You guys are the number one seed. Your guys are prohibitive MVP. Like everyone's saying, it's, you know, it's not gonna be unanimous, but still, like, oh yeah, he's the MVP.
It's don't so complain. Weird because I do have a lot of Rockets fans on my timeline, and they're so defensive over this thing. Like, it's weird to me, right? I don't know.
My thing is, I've seen this a lot. Mm-hmm. Somebody's like, hey, man, Harden's – I see this is almost a word for it. Harden's an MVP, but LeBron is making his case late. Mm-hmm. And then they'll chime in and they'll be so upset. It's sad that you would let a late push think – I mean, that's ridiculous. You think anyone else – I'm like, dude, the first sentence was Harden is the MVP. Stop being so sensitive. It's amazing.
It's because they're hurt. Like, you can tell they are sensitive. Because their guy, who is nearly the MVP every year, somehow is never that good in the playoffs. And it's kind of a touchy subject over there for the Rockets. And it's a worrisome thing for them. And I think they kind of try to compensate for that by, you know, insisting that Harden gets his due and just overlooking what happens after MVP voting criteria is over and it's the postseason.
I'm fine. I want him to win so they stop, dude. I just want him to stop.
So let's get to the chase. Already the favorites this season.
Depends on Steph Curry and if he can get back and actually be healthy. I think if Steph is not really ready to play, then I think I would favor them in a series against the Warriors.
Okay. I'm with him. Everything hinges on Steph's health. If Steph is not ready to come back and be 100%, then Golden State's in trouble. And as long as the Rockets are 100%, I think they're going to be okay.
Yeah, a lot of that. Just to chime in quickly, a lot does ride kind of on Luka Mbamute, which is strange, but he makes their defense happen in a lot of ways, and he's hurt too. So they're saying it's not as bad as the last time he hurt his shoulder. We'll see about that. They don't really need him for round one, but they will need him for playing the Warriors. I think he's probably a big part of their plan about trying to somehow slow down KD. So
I'm going to say this. Hold on. If anything you say starts with, it all hinges on Luke, many names, then there are more. And I'm not saying you're wrong. Just saying, think about what you just said. If we're saying that it hinges on Luke, say his name again. Bamute. I can never say his name.
Bamute.
Luke Bamute, yeah.
Luke Many Names, yes. If you're telling me that their playoff success hinges on Luke Many Names, they might be in more trouble than we
are. Hey, man. Look no farther than Andre Roberson and the Thunder. One long defender can make a big difference don't have many of them.
We'll get to that later. Hey, guys. If you never listened to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast before, obviously it's been a year since I had an episode, it's a lot of NBA talk as, after all, I am an online NBA writer. But I've also dabbled on other sports, wrestling, music, TV shows, dating, so I basically talk about whatever I want here. I didn't want to limit myself to NBA talk, but you will usually get a lot of that here on this show. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Ray Ray is Fundamental on iTunes, you can also find a podcast on Stitcher, and of course, you can find and download this wonderful podcast at rayray.net/fun. There's a hyphen between the rays, so don't forget that. This is Ray Ray, and now back to the show. Are they kind of in the same boat as Toronto here? Like, Toronto, obviously, they've kind of fell short, and Houston has too in the past few years. Is it hard to believe in them just because of that?
I'll say no, just because they're really freaking good, and, like, the Timberwolves can't really play defense, and I just think, like when the talent difference is this high, I don't think it matters that much. Like, I don't think there's going to be a clutch situation for them to blow in this series.
I'm going to say the reason it's different is because they actually added like a whole new All-Star this year. So it's a lot different because, you know, Toronto's basically the same cast with, you know, the rookies kind of growing up or the young guys growing up off the bench. This is like they injected a whole brand new 18-10 All-Star, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's not just, hey, we're developing. Hey, if they brought in reinforcements. So yeah, but in a way it is though, because if Chris Paul and James Harden can't get it done this year, mm-hmm. as fair as it might be, they're gonna get criticized.
Real quick, James, how much do you like making people mad about the whole Chris Paul thing? Because I know you do that sometimes on Twitter.
I mean, I'll say this. Uh-huh. I was one of the people who said, "Hey, man, I think this is gonna work." Mm-hmm. But yeah, I call him the imp, and you know, I don't. Hey, it is what it is, man.
Yeah.
I throw my guards like, you know, Russell Westbrook and Steph Curry. They got superpowers.
Right.
Chris Paul is just really, really skilled, which is awesome. And it's showing, like, right now, he's making that team sing. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I do kind of enjoy when people are like, well, look at his efficiency stats. And so I'll be like, well, I mean, what has it gotten him? So
right.
I'm almost dreading the fact that if the Rockets make the finals this year or, you know, heaven forbid, win it, I'm going to have to really hear it after that. And there's nothing really left to bludgeon Chris Paul with after that.
I'm not even going to get into what we said about Chris Paul along with Zach Harper a few years ago. We'll talk about that later after the show, Ty.
Okay.
Let's go to the Thunder and the Jazz. Now people are going to start asking us about that one. Thunder and the Jazz. The Thunder won 48 games, and Utah is the fifth seed. Here's the thing about OKC. They're one of two teams this season that are both in the top 10 offense and defensive ratings, right? Like, that's weird to me, because they're so iso ball with OKC. And they lost Robertson in the last 3 months or 2 months or so. They were 11th and 15th, respectively, since Robertson got hurt, so they did drop off.
Yeah, that's my thing. Like, once you take a look at the numbers since Roberson has dropped off, the other stuff is misleading.
Yeah,
because they're honestly not as good since Roberson's been gone. And you know, top 10 is what you kind of think of as a standard of a contender,
mm-hmm.
and they're not top 10.
Yeah,
you know?
they're average without Roberson.
Funny, they're that. Definitely yeah. average is definitely a good way to put it. So like that concerns me about them,
mm-hmm.
definitely.
And then Utah, of course, you know, they like to slow it down so much, right? So are we going to see like 85-80 games in this series?
I mean, if we do, then Utah won.
Yeah.
Because that's what they want to have happen.
Yeah.
I actually did say Jazz in seven. I think that their style is going to make it tough for Russ because they have a good point guard defender in Ricky Rubio. Obviously, they have a great center behind him in Gobert defensively. I really think the series might end up hinging on Paul George and what he can do to open up the floor and what Melo does or does not do to ruin his team's chances.
No, he nailed it, man. I'm going to say this. Ricky Rubio's defense, while it used to be really good, I think a little bit overrated now. Now it's propped up by the team he's on. Mm-hmm. He's not that strong a defender individually anymore. But luckily, like, you know, they're almost like a good version of the Bucks in that they have a lot of line defenders, and they got a shot blocker back there. So it's and in another way, it reminds me, it's almost like a bizarro Bucks situation, is that I think the Thunder have more talent, especially at the top, but they're so undisciplined that they're playing against a team that's not as talented, you know, for, in the top two or three positions, but they're probably deeper and everyone knows their role, almost like the Celtics. So even though I'm calling Thunder in six, I don't know about that. And I wouldn't be shocked if it was like Jazz in five. I wouldn't be shocked because you can almost bait Russell Westbrook into, you know, maybe short circuiting. And this is gonna be a test of a test of Russell Westbrook's will and his fortitude, mental fortitude, because they should win this series. You know, they got home court advantage, but if they don't, it's gonna be because, like, obviously I think it's gonna be because, again, like, coaching. They've been out coached.
Rubio can shoot now. Isn't that weird? Like, he's been having a lot of good offensive games this season. So
who's that? Brewer?
Huh?
You said Brewer?
Rubio.
No, Rubio.
Oh, Rubio. Yeah. Shoot. Yeah, it's been pretty shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, I got Thunder in seven, but yeah, it won't be shocking if the Jazz win. Like, that's how they beat the Clippers, right? Just slow it down and then just get it to the last seconds. And, well, they don't have Joe Johnson anymore, but, you know, they can get something done.
I think the Jazz, like, their biggest weakness is if you can go five out and kind of chase Gobert off of the floor, and then they lose their identity a bit. I don't think the Thunder are a team that's built to do that. I don't think they really have a stretch five. They're going to play Steven Adams a lot because he's terrific. But, I mean, then you're kind of playing the Jazz's game. I mean, the Thunder are going to probably win the rebound battle because they always do, and that'll help them. But I mentioned earlier the Celtics are first in defensive rating. Mm-hmm. The Jazz are second by 0.1 points per 100 possessions. So they're essentially tied for first. Utah's right there. And Philly is right behind them at 102. Jazz is 101.6. Boston's 101.5. Mm-hmm. So that just shows how good Embiid is and the Sixers have been defensively. But, yeah, I mean, shout out to Utah. I mean, if they can slow down the pace a lot and get Russ to score 25 points on 35 shots, they'll have a great chance.
Yeah, OKC can play pretty slow. I mean, they're average in pace. They're 17th in pace, but we all know that the Jazz specialize in that sort of thing. They have over the past, what? I don't know, since the Jerry Sloan years, basically.
Yeah, my problem is that the Jazz are going to try to bait OKC into taking the mid-range shot. OKC loves taking the mid-range between Paul George, Melo, and Russ, but they shoot it so poorly at times. So, I mean, if Russ gets hot, and we've seen him beat teams by just, you know, his little cotton shot, and if Paul George can find his stroke, and if Melo can just be average, then I think, because he's had bad games. So, yeah, man, it's going to be about the discipline and also the size, because we know that Utah likes to run out Gobert in favors, and sure, they don't play on that floor a lot, but if they can do that and play Melo, you know, off the floor, then it's a chess match, because you're saying about the five out. Jeremy Grant plays a lot of center for OKC. Mm-hmm. But if he's in and they're playing, that Adams is off the floor, then advantage Utah. So it's going to be interesting, man. It's a chess match.
Is this the series you're looking forward to the most? Because it's so close.
Kind of. I think this is my second. There's one we haven't covered yet that's my first. Mm-hmm. I will say shouts to former Buck Epudo, who is Utah's backup center, also an absolute monster defensively. Like, there's no break from a great defensive center when you play the Jazz, which it makes it, like, exhausting. Like, there's a capable shot blocker back there whenever they want there to be.
I'm not sure if you'll get this reference, but my friend just said recently that Epe Udo looks like Sean Stockman from Boys to Men, if you know who they are.
I do, and that's actually a good one.
I don't, but I will tell you, he used to run a book club when he was a Buck, and that's your fun Epe Udo fact today.
I do remember seeing him tweet about that sort of thing, right? Back when
he was He's huge on literacy, that guy.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'll put a picture of Epe Udo and Sean Stockman on the page once we're done with this podcast.
I think I'm looking forward to most the Washington-Toronto one, because that one seems like it has, like, some bad blood really there, and it has four all-star level guards. And it's basically like a contrast in styles, and the Raptors have the narrative to go against. That's the one I'm looking for to most, I think.
Bad blood against their opponents and within themselves, right? So that's great.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
third seed Portland, a little shocking here, but it's not that much different from the sixth seed New Orleans because they were only one game apart. 49 wins by Portland, 48 wins by the New Orleans Pelicans. Wow, this is pretty close too because we've seen Anthony Davis basically take over the last couple of months. Without Boogie, they were 21-13 and fifth in defensive rating. What do you guys think about that?
This is, Go ahead. Okay, I'll go.
No, go ahead, Ty. Go ahead.
I'll go. Just because this was the series I referenced, so this is the one I'm looking forward to the most. I just feel like you have a guy on each side who is capable of taking over games. Obviously, Damian Lillard for the Blazers and Anthony Davis for the Pelicans. Completely as far apart as you can get in terms of player types. You know, a shot blocking center who's dominant around the rim compared to the pull up point guard who can, he drives inside as well, but primarily known for being a long range threat. And I just think it'll be really fun to see which of those styles kind of wins out. Like, I think this series is going to be a close one because I don't think either team is dramatically better. Like, you look at, obviously, the Blazers have CJ, and they have some fun wings. They have Nurkic, but the Pelicans have Jrue Holiday, who is, like, not really considered an all-star caliber point guard. He's probably on the tier right below. Mirotić has been just tearing it up lately. Mm-hmm. Some people will have you believe in Rajon Rondo, but I think it's going to come down to Lillard and Davis, and I think that battle is just going to be terrific.
Hey, let me ask you, Ray. Mm-hmm. Last, like, five or six games, what kind of numbers do you think Mirotić is putting up?
This is one of my favorite stats.
Does he have 27 points per game or something like that over the last six games?
You may guess a point in rebounds last five, six games.
27-10.
Whoa, dude. Okay, that's, you know what? I guess because I asked the question, you decided to go high with it. But yeah, he's been averaging almost 25 and, like, 12.
Okay. And no, I saw something like that earlier today, so I was like, wow. He's been crazy. Oh,
and
for
shooting
him.
Like 47% from three on like six attempts a night. It's insane. He's been lights out. Mirotić has been he's been in fuego. So I'm big on Dame. I love Dame. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say this. I'm going to tear my rotator cuff, pat myself on the back. I'm one of the people who was tracking since Nurkic got there last season, right? Mm-hmm. And they were really good with Nurkic. And I said if Nurkic was there all year, they would have been a top four seed and Dame would be looked at as a superstar.
Right.
What happened this year? They were a top four seed, oh yeah, and Dame happened. Looks like a superstar. So I'm going to say that James is always right. Thank you. Go ahead.
I want to correct you on something real quick.
Okay.
You're almost always right. Those IC names, instead of Nurkic, it's Nurkic. That's how they're all pronounced. It's like a cheat code. So
look here,
like,
I'm in America. I speak American. You understand
Goran,
me?
Goran Dragic.
I am speaking American. You understand me?
I tried my best. Shouts to all of my Serbian
friends. I'm not making it. So I apologize if it's Nurkic. So it's Nurkic. Okay.
Yeah, it's an itch sound. They're all like Jokic. They're all like that.
Right. So he's not an all-star or anything. He's not even a star, but he ties that Portland roster together. Right. They got all these shooters and perimeter guys.
He's huge, is what he is.
Yeah. He's an anchor. He's a space eater, and they need that. He had the touch of a dirty mean streak to the game. So that's pretty cool. So I think I picked Portland this series. Ty?
Yeah, you picked Portland.
I don't remember. It's a toss up.
Yeah, it's a toss up. Yeah.
Anthony Davis is the best player in the series, and that matters, right, for a playoff series. But I just don't. I don't see how like Drew can probably erase one of CJ or Dame. Not even erase Dame. He can make Dame work. But Rondo's not a great defender, and no one else can stop the other guy. I think so. I think Mo Harkless is going to be key. He has to come back and be healthy.
Yeah, Portland lets out a lot of threes because they know they can work the inside right defensively because Nurkic just neutralizes them inside. Portland is eighth this year in defensive rating. Like, that's dramatic compared to past few years because they're not known for their defense in the past few years of CJ and Damian, right? So, since then, they're a top 10 defensive team, and who knows how far Portland can go, right? I like them this year.
Yeah, Golden State's not healthy. Houston still has the stigma attached to them. Mm-hmm. Every other team has a lot of big question marks and flaws, and Yeah, I mean, I know that so does Portland, but, you know, Dame is, I think Dame is really on a mission to prove that he belongs in that upper echelon player. CJ is kind of underrated still. We make fun of Evan Turner, but he's kind of like a good glue guy for those guys.
He is.
I think they're still missing like one more guy to create offense on the perimeter. So even if it comes up to bite them this year, I like what they're doing in Portland.
I like Portland in six, guys.
I have the Pelicans in seven. Mm-hmm. I think Anthony Davis makes a difference, and shouts to Etuan Moore, who's quietly had a very strong season as a sort of, you know, not main guy, obviously not a star, but shooting like 50% from the field and 42.5% from three, 12.5 points per game, started all but two games this season, played in all 82. He's going to matter in this series, especially defensively.
It feels like forever ago, but did he score 36 points this season in the game?
Probably.
Yeah. I would say shouts to Drew Holiday, because Drew has been one of those underrated, forgotten, really good players in the league. And this will be like, you know, we're going to look back and this season will be forgotten for him, right? Because like some people have done, like, hey, Russ, triple-double. LeBron, what's he doing at year 15? You know, people going to talk about all this other stuff, but Drew averaged 19, 5-6 this year. Didn't shoot the three great, but he played really good defense, and he was like, his emergence was a key part of that, you know, their resurgence after Boogie went down. So, hey, people forget, he was an all-star back in 2014, I think it was. You know, he averaged like 18-8 that year,
right,
for Philly. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, so Drew's a really good player. Injuries and other off-court stuff, injuries and things with his wife have kind of, you know, he hasn't played much. But yeah, he's a really good player, man. Somebody was saying today they were mad because, like, oh, Lauri Markkanen is better than him, and Devin Booker, and naming all these, like, and I'm like, look, these are good young players, but they're not better than Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday is ask any NBA player, and they'll probably tell you, Drew's a dog.
This must be
He plays defense, too. You were right, by the way, Ray. Etuan Moore dropped 36 on the Rockets, 15 for 20 from the field, 6 for 8 from deep. He also dropped 30 on Memphis, but I don't know if that counts.
Also, it might be teammate bias at the time, but Andre Iguodala called Drew Holiday the best perimeter defender in the league at that point. So
he's a, like James said, he is a dog. Mm-hmm. He's a hell of a player on both ends.
Yeah.
This is TJP, and you're listening to the Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast.
And the last series we're going to talk about, which is the rematch of the Western Finals, but really, isn't really that much of a rematch. The Warriors, 58 wins this season, which is significantly less than their past 3 years. And San Antonio, their first sub-50 win season in forever. No Kawhi, at least for now. No Steph Curry, for sure. So, are you going to watch this series? Because this is kind of like...
Let me ask you guys this. Imagine if, for whatever reason, let's say any other team's best player, like even like Brow. Brow was hurt, and they say, I cleared to play, and he didn't come back to play. Mm-hmm. Or if Curry had this knee sprain, like, hey, we cleared him 2 weeks ago, but he's not ready to come back yet. Uh-huh. Imagine what the Armageddon would be like on social media and on ESPN. But somehow the Spurs, and this, I'm not complaining, but they've built up the goodwill where people have been more or less, we all raised our eyebrows at the Kawhi thing, but nobody really raised a stink. And this is the most, like, I can't wait till the whole story comes out with this Kawhi thing. But, yeah, he's been cleared since, like, December, January to come
back.
He just like, nah, I'm good. So we don't know what's going on with his knee. We don't know what he's feeling physically. I'm not blaming him. It's just one of those, like, this is off-top kind of thing, but just a weird, weird whole story going on with Kawhi. So,
yeah, didn't we have this case in 2009 when Kevin Garnett got hurt?
As far as what?
That he wasn't, because we didn't know if he was going to be cleared or not.
Oh, well, Kevin Garnett was really hurt. Mm-hmm. Kevin Garnett was like, you know, his thing was like an injury.
Right.
He wanted to come back to play, but like, no, this is different though.
Right? I'm just saying because they said nothing. They said nothing for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was kind of a mystery injury. No, you're right. It was kind of like Kevin, like, because we kept expecting Kevin Garnett to come back, and they were keeping mum about it.
Yeah.
In this case, though, like the Spurs actually came out and said, "Hey, man, we cleared this dude back in December, January. Yeah. He's waiting. When his camp says he's ready, this is Pop saying this in the media. If his camp says he's ready, then he's ready. That's like, this is a real strange case. But back to the original question. Yeah, it loses a lot of luster because, mm-hmm. I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge, as good as he's been, and shout out to my man Jesse Blanchard at B-Ball Breakdown. He wrote a really good piece about LaMarcus. You guys should check that out.
Yeah.
As good as LaMarcus has been, he's like a throwback kind of jump shooting power forward, and the Warriors are well equipped to deal with him, with Draymond and even KD. So I think this should be a short series. They've overachieved all season, them being the Spurs, but I think the Warriors, even with just three of their all-stars healthy, that should be enough to make it a real short series.
I hate to say this again, but are we wrong to doubt San Antonio yet again? This keeps happening every year.
I mean, they're playing the Warriors is the problem. Like, this Kevin Durant guy is pretty good. Yeah. As far as the controversy, or not lack thereof, about the Kawhi thing, the most interesting part for me was when Tony Parker said he had the same kind of injury as Kawhi, but, quote, 100 times worse. Tony Parker's rehab took 8 months, and he's ancient, but... Kawhi's injury happened last playoffs, so it's certainly been 8 months since then now. It's just a really weird situation. I don't think anyone can really make sense of it, like you said, James. But, I mean, yeah, without him, I mean, LaMarcus is good, but, like, the Warriors are the Warriors. I mean, just because they didn't give a damn about the regular season, especially the end of it when they were all kind of banged up, doesn't mean they're not ready to run at the title again.
They still have 3 all-stars. That's a really team.
Pretty good amount of all-stars to have.
Yeah.
That's why I keep seeing people, and they're kind of trying to trash KD about how, oh, look how the team looks without Steph Curry. Sure, I don't care how good your car is. You take away one of the tires, it's going to look a lot worse, right? And the team is built around Steph Curry, basically. And, you know, sure, you still got 3 of the all-stars, but you don't just replace Steph Curry with Quinn Cook and look the same. You just don't.
Right.
But that being said, they're still more talented than basically every other team in the West. And, you know, that's one thing. Can they overcome the Houston offense? You know, that'd be the question. Can they overcome LeBron James? That'll be the question. But I think even without, let's say Steph Curry didn't step on the court again, I still got to take them as a slight favorite to come out of the West.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, without Steph, like, they're still going to be so great defensively, like Klay on the perimeter, Draymond down low, KD also down low and on the perimeter. People forget, like, this is my number one way of finding out if someone I'm talking to is not really worth talking to, is if they tell me the Warriors only win because, like, they shoot threes and they don't play any defense. Like, no, they're one of the best defensive teams in the league. They've been one of the best defensive teams in the league this entire run. They lock everyone down. They're really good on that side, too. So, I mean, I think they're still going to be a problem for everyone. Like, they have 3 all-stars. They're great. Kevin Durant is capable of being one of the best players in the league. And they're the Warriors for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Hey, quick question for you guys. You guys remember when Golden State was up by like 19 on the Celtics, and the Celtics came back and beat Golden State? You guys remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay. Did that end the streak, or was that this year?
That was this year. Just wanted to see you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, no. The Bucks ended their streak. It was after a back-to-back against the Celtics, where the Celtics, I think.
Oh, when they won 24 straight, right?
24. Was it 24?
24. Because they had a shirt from, I believe it was Mallory Edens that said that had a new shirt.
24-1. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So G State in 5, I guess. I'll give the Spurs 1 win.
Yeah, me too. Go ahead, Ty.
I have Warriors in 6. I mean, I think they're a little clunky right now still. It'll take them a little while to get their gears together. One of my predictions was that they're going to lose game 1, and then NBA Twitter is instantly going to go, the Spurs have this series locked up. The Warriors stink now. Dusty is over. The Warriors are going to win the series because that's just how these things go. Never forget that the Spurs won game 1, I believe, against Kevin Durant's Thunder by 40 points the year that – I think it was 2016. They literally won by 40 points on a huge LaMarcus game. I think it was LaMarcus was there at the time. Yeah. And everyone was like, oh, that series is over. You can't, including me. You can't come back from that. And then the Thunder won the series. So let's not overreact too much, people.
Right.
So yeah, no, I want to be over. I love the overreaction.
Well, what were you saying, James?
I don't know. David Bertrand for president. I don't know.
That's true. That's accurate.
Just be fun. So I want you. So beside the top guys in every series, we all know who every guy top guy in the series. Uh-huh. Give me one player from each team that you think can sway the series. Now I'm going to start with you, Ray. Uh-huh. And let's talk to Toronto, Washington. So not one of the top 4 guards. right? Not one of those guys. Give me the one guy you think is sway the series from Toronto and one guy from Washington.
Fred VanVleet.
Okay. No, that's a perfect answer. So yeah. That's Toronto. How about from the Wizards? Give me the X-Factor Wizards, for Wizards.
God, it's so tough. I do like Kelly Oubre, though. Like, if he can provide a boost off the bench, or does he even start? I don't even know anymore. But if he has a big series like he did last year, then I think he can do something. But
what you got, Ty?
I'm going to say Jonas Valanciunas, just for the simple fact that, like, they're so much better when he's active and doing stuff, and then sometimes he'll just sort of be unplayable in series, and then they're starting off in a hole when your starting center, who makes $16 million a year, can't really play. So I think if he's productive against Washington, that's huge. I think for the Wizards, I'm a little torn, but I'm going to go with Markieff Morris just because he has, I think, more upside to be a real X factor than Otto Porter, although Otto Porter will be very important too.
Mm-hmm. Nice. I'm going to agree with my boy Ray, man. I think it's Oubre for the Wizards, but I'm going to go with Anunoby. I think Anunoby has to settle in and have a really strong defensive series if Toronto wants to wrap that series up quickly.
All right.
I like that question. I like that. How about let's do one more. Let's do one for the West, then. Let me ask you guys one from the West. Houston Timberwolves. Give me one guy from each team that has to – oh, you know what? No, let's go with Ty's series. Portland. So Portland's Dame and CJ. Not Dame or CJ, and then not Brow and not
Holiday.
Not Drew Holiday. Yeah. Give me an X from each team.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'm gonna roll with our guy Mirotić for the Pelicans. I think if he keeps up those insane numbers, it'll help them a lot. Portland is interesting. I'm actually gonna say, because I think he'll play, and I think if he's terrible, it hurts them a lot. I'm gonna say Evan Turner. If they get good minutes out of Evan Turner, that's going to be huge for the Blazers.
I like it.
I had the same pick for Portland as Evan Turner because, again, James mentioned
not to cut you off, I just feel like he has the biggest room between his ceiling and his floor.
Yeah. I mean, he was number two pick for a reason, right? Like, we thought he had so much talent. And
No, but go ahead. Evan Turner, you think Evan Turner too?
Yeah, Evan Turner. And for the Pelicans, I'm going with Rondo because you know how Rondo can be sometimes, right? Like sometimes he's just chasing his own stats, and then another day he's just like the ultimate two point guard.
Are there other times?
You know what I mean, though. Like we've seen Rondo before, right?
Yeah, you're right. Rondo can I hate to use the example, but against the Celtics last year, he was really good before he got hurt. And, you know, they were actually up 2-0 or whatever it was. So,
yeah.
No, you got a point. Rondo's definitely, that's one to watch. And I like you guys said Evan Turner. I'm going to go with Al-Farouq Aminu. He's been hitting his threes. He kind of is like, he's like the do-it-all defender for those guys. So if he can slow down Brow, because they play him at power forward a lot too. They play him as a big man. If he can help slow down Brow and he can hit his open threes, he's going to be a difference maker. And then, for the Pelicans. I don't want to use – I'm trying to find a different team than you guys. I want to have something to argue about.
We haven't argued at all.
I know. This is right. all friendly and crap. I know, right? What's this get-along stuff? I'm just going to pick somebody else, I guess. No, not Cheek Diallo. I can't even pick anybody else. I'm looking at the roster.
Is Solomon Hill still on the Pelicans?
Barely.
Yeah, he just came back. No, he came back from being injured like just a few weeks ago, and he hasn't really been doing much. But yes, I'm going to say Solomon Hill. They need another wing defender. They need somebody else who can maybe help defend, at least help defend like CJ McCollum. And Solomon Hill is supposed to be that kind of rough and rugged defensive glue guy. If he can hit open shots, which we know he's not great at. I'm going to use Solomon Hill. If he can play big, he can help be a deciding factor for the Pelicans.
You would hope so. He's getting paid $13 million a year. Like,
yeah.
I would think that they got him for that, right? So,
one last Rondo thing.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time since the 2011-12 season with Boston, He was a positive contributor to the Pelicans this season, just barely, with a net rating of 0.5 points per 100 possessions. They were half a point per 100 better with him. That's better than the negatives he's had for seven straight seasons before this. But, yeah, he's technically helped the Pelicans. Technically correct is the best kind, right?
So it's third seven grain of salt and nothing at all, right?
Sure.
I'll say this, dude. The, Rondo Hive is one of the weirdest, most fascinating hives.
There's a lot of different weird hives on basketball Twitter, man.
Absolutely. But they are one of the most rabid, like, devout hives. And if you, like, you know, like you said, he's been a net positive this year. He was a net positive every year before this. And yet still, they're like, those are just stupid advanced numbers. You don't know. You don't know how much he makes the team better. I'm like, I do know. He makes the team worse.
How could a stat be negative? It doesn't make any sense.
All right, guys. So that's it for my first return podcast in a year. Snotty, go ahead and tell them where to follow you on Twitter, all your social media stuff, where you work at, all that stuff. Where you write at?
Oh man! All right, you can follow me at Snotty Drippin. You can also follow me at DunkTalesPod, which me and Joe Borelli run. And you can follow me at RBI Hoops. See, you're the one that started this. You said say everywhere, so I'm gonna say everywhere.
That's fine. That's fine.
And then obviously, check out my writing at bballbreakdown.com and check out the writing at realballinsiders.com. And of course, check me out on this podcast, which is going to be awesome.
Snotty is one of the most passionate basketball writers I know. Like, I've known him for a long, long time. NBA All-Star 2011, right? Like 7 years now. So, yeah. So, Ty, go ahead.
Yeah, plug them. You can follow me on Twitter at Ty Windisch. That is spelled T-I-W-I-N-D-I-S-C-H.
Snotty, what's his real name?
Timothy Ignatius. Hello, Timothy.
Sure. That's what Ty stands for. Why not? Put it on my Wikipedia. I don't have Wikipedia. You can find the podcast everywhere you find podcasts. Basically, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. That is called Time Out with Ty. You should be able to spell that based on context clues, so I'm not going to spell that for you. I write at The Step Back and Behind the Buck Pass. Those are both very worthy sites you should check out, again, among other places. And I guest on podcasts all over, including this one, happily enough.
Hey. Thank you very much. And you can follow me on Twitter at The No Look Pass. You can follow the podcast Twitter, which will be active again, at Rary Is Fun, because you cannot fit Rary Is Fundamental. They only allow 15 characters. You can also find my writings. I will start again at thenolookpass.com. And also writing Laker stuff at forumblueandgold.com. Thank you so much, Ms. and Ty. And we will talk to you guys again soon.
Enjoy. Welcome back, Ray.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me, my guy.
Thank you. Game over,
yeah! Hashtag blame Ray Ray.